Welcome back to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. With me is Phil Conlon of Classical Undergrounds, Wednesday, 6 to 8 p.m. And I urge you to check Phil's program out. I promised that we would enlighten the American population if we can reach them with this news, that they have a Second Amendment to their Constitution, and they allegedly right-wing people love it. That's because apparently right-wing people can't read. The following is the Second Amendment. It was put in 1791. It says a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So, for some reason, people only read the second half of that. The Oath Keepers are not a well-regulated, clearly not a well-regulated militia. The modern equivalent of what they were talking about in 1791 is the National Guard. Actually, the Oath Keepers are in need of regulation by a regulated militia. That would help out everyone. But further to the Oath Keepers, remember where they were seen. They were noticed at the when there was the uprising of Black Americans over the death of the young 18-year-old Black American, Phil, I think you know his name, Mr. Brown.
Michael Brown. Michael yeah. Brown.
It is. I really agree with all those. It's very important to say the name. The horrible situation of Ferguson, really ugly, oppressive racism, etc. So there was a spontaneous resistance and outrage by the community, which I suspect has largely not been corrected, despite everybody saying, oh, we got to do something. I suspect very little has changed in Ferguson, but I can't be sure of that. But I know that they don't have a state mechanism that serves the people. So I assume that the parties, the Republican Democrats, got together and created a solution, which is no solution. But when this resistance happened, the police were in the streets. A lot of people were injured. I think there might have been deaths there. I'm not certain about the numbers. But we read that there was this group of armed men and wearing identifiable, you know, little patches on their shoulders or hats or whatnot, who appeared on rooftops and on street corners with high-powered weapons. And they were not arrested. The crisis in America is that sort of thing. And the fact that they didn't arrest them is all the proof you need that the country does not practice law and order. Certain people are subject to law and order, and they are mainly Black Americans and Latino and the poor. They get plenty of policing. A group of autodidacts who train themselves in the Constitution and get in little rooms together, like a moose lodge, pledge love for one another. There's a lot of love in there, by the way. If look at them very closely, their language with each other, I would say, might invite a shrink. They pledge that they're going to protect the Constitution. And when they showed up at the White House, pardon me, the wrong house, they showed up at Congress, they were talking about the Constitution and as though they're the ones who know all about this. Actually, what was going on in front of them was an exercise in the constitutional process. They wanted to jump over a few paragraphs and shoot somebody. But that's the problem. One of the main problems that they have in the United States is that they have permitted this spreading of armed groups who seem to think that if they call themselves a militia, they get to carry guns around. Well, That would be true only if they were under the authority of the governor of the state or of the of some recognized institution of the country, a legal institution. But that isn't what has been transpiring. And they're not the only ones. Now, I think there's a little blessing for those who attended and were on the perimeter of the Congress and some of those who went inside where they were not supposed to go. If they were peaceful and obeyed the orders that were, they were given to leave, they should be in the clear. But this, because now we've identified a group, the Oath Keepers, who definitely had a plan. There's evidence of a plan by them. And as you know, that's, Phil, you would appreciate, you and I have attended many demonstrations, and you know, somebody suddenly starts throwing things, and you realize, hey, this whoever that is, I don't know him. And very often we suspect provocateurs. People go to many demonstrations, always wonder about behavior of certain individuals, particularly those who wear masks, by the way. So you try to make yourself scarce, or you separate yourself because you realize, hey, this is the problem. So I would say for the mass of the demonstrators, as wrong-headed or crazy as they were, they're not, unless they were associated with the Oath Keepers, it's a question of what did you do? And I have in mind Aaron Mostovsky, who's the son of a prominent Brooklyn judge, the brother of a leading Republican in Brooklyn, who also, by the way, was there, but not in, he was smart enough not to go into the rotunda, but his brother, who was the one wearing deer skins, I think, and maybe some fox hair, I don't know, he was half naked. He's an authority on the Constitution, that's why he came with his stick and his borrowed police plastic shield. If he's not a member of the Oath Keepers, he's just a found-in, as they used to call him, and can be prosecuted. But it's probably for the good of everybody. Go ahead and prosecute, but let's not get all crazy and try to, you know, turn this into what Hillary Clinton called a vast right-wing conspiracy. I showed the evidence, but otherwise, calm down, be rational. So, by the way, yeah, I mentioned I was going to have to give you the name. It was Ashley Babbitt from Maryland. She's 35 years old. She's a one who was a veteran. Her death is going to be the most intriguing to understand, because for all the talk about weapons, the only weaponry that I saw was what was it, bear mace or something? Somebody fired a bear mace. There's the case of somebody throwing a fire extinguisher. They did arrest, they said they found, the Washington police say they found five weapons. And I would say, if you have a Trump crowd who've come down to the Congress in by the thousands, and you only found five guns, I'm surprised, because carrying guns now has become, you know, a point of privilege, and I'm ordinarily you expect to find more, and the fact that none of them were fired tells you that there was no organized decision to fire, and one shot gets fired, and usually when you have armed people facing each other, one side fires, the other side fires. Didn't happen. It was an ignorant melee. And I, of course, the Democrats would like now to use it as a hammer to beat on the Republicans, as they richly deserve. However, I suspect they're gonna quietly kind of move this on, because it doesn't, when you come to the Oath Keepers, I don't know if the Democrats are ready to crack them. They should. Are the Democrats and the Republicans ready to crack these guys? I don't think they are. Because why? America is a divided society. The Republicans have a headache on their hands. They have Trump. And people say, well, we're going to fix him. We're going to deny him that we're going to have an impeachment and deny him the chance to further serve ever. That is an interesting road to go down. He got 75 million votes. I don't think Mitch McConnell running for president would get 75 million. And I think the Republican Party, what they want is for Trump to go away and the people who supported him to stay in the party. But if you gang up on him, I'm just talking tactics now, not my favorite, what's your flavor, chocolate or peanuts or whatever. It is a difficult political decision. And the Democrats are going to, of course, they're thinking, well, we will go for a knockout. But this business of impeaching each other has become a trend. You know, Phil, before it started with Nixon, there weren't any impeachments. The last one was Johnson, the man who succeeded Abraham Lincoln.
That was the only one. That was the only one. And there were some very substantial reasons to do it. And it failed. That's the main thing about it. It failed because it's a very high bar you have to clear to get it.
If anybody needed impeaching, it was him. Yeah. Andrew Johnson was giving a free pass to all the Confederate leaders. These were criminals. These were people, actual traitors who'd taken up arms against the federal government and formed armies. And so they, and when the war was over, because Johnson was a man from Tennessee, he was actually himself a Southerner and a profoundly racist. And so he wanted to make sure, okay, we don't have slavery, but we do have racism. And he wanted to return the white rulers to power, as eventually did happen. But he was fought by this new political formation called the Republicans. And they impeached him, but they lost by one vote. But now moving it forward, the next time is Richard Nixon. And since then, it has become, all right, it's my turn, and then it's your turn. It's been revenge. And these two parties have tasted blood. And the danger they're getting themselves in is impeaching each other. Here's a guy who, by the way, is done. If Biden had a sense of humor, he'd say, well, that was an interesting exercise, a display of stupidity by the outgoing president. I hope he doesn't hurt himself on his way to Florida and just forget it. He's done. But if you decide you're going to, we want blood, you have a country where Trump received more votes in 2020 than he did in 2016. Of course, Mr. Biden got a lot more votes than Hillary Clinton got. And he got, I think, 82 million. But you ought to be talking to each other to see how you can keep from this becoming, not that I want to help them out. I just assume they throttle each other. But because actually the American people are weighed down under the two-party system, which Frederick Engels pointed out, and I refer you, go to the Twitter of Stephen Gowans, and nice to quote there from him. He says, these two parties function as cartels, gangs, and they make sure that they impose discipline on their party members and on the party policy. And you can see it in Nancy Pelosi crushing the so-called squad. It's embarrassing. And the Republican Party does the same. But at any rate, that's the story on the matter of the impeachment and the fact that they're not addressing the matters that have divided the country. This, by the way, is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I have a quote for you, Phil. I like this one because it's so apropos of our time. The quote is from an incoming president of the United States. He says, "Our long national nightmare is over." That's Jimmy Carter talking about Nixon, our long national nightmare. Carter lasted 4 years and was succeeded by Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, it was actually the beginning of the long national nightmare. I mean, Nixon was the exact one.
You know, it was Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
It turned out, you know, that Reagan came in. I can't resist mentioning, I think I should say, that the symbol of division in America is now permanent. And I mentioned they should get rid of people who are pretending that they are malicious when actually they are armed gangs who are racist and bigoted and dangerous to American citizens, but they're afraid to do anything about it. That's one problem. There's another problem, and it has to do with Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan said that Jimmy Carter was a wimp, that he wasn't enough worse. You know, he had to do something, had to have more beat up on people. Carter was falsely, really, claiming that he hadn't been an aggressor as president. He actually had been quite, there's some evidence he was, but not to the degree that suit the palate of the American people. And so Ronald Reagan said, we have to restore our place in the world as a rough, tough number one power. And with him and around him were people promoting a flag of a partisan group. The flag was the MIA POW flag. It's black and it has a watchtower with a banner, I think with a gun. And then there's a profile of a white American who's downcast. And it says, "You are not forgotten." And this was a group who initially were claiming falsely, and apropos of the opening of the show, we're talking about false claims, because it was widespread, believed by particularly the right wing of American politics, and murmured about by the center and the liberals. The claim was that awful communist Vietnamese were holding American POWs. And how did they know that? Well, they said, "We have these MIAs, that's missing in action." And as was argued by an American scholar, they played a little game where MIA was made to equal POW. If there's a missing in action, most reports actually say presumed dead. But by saying, "Well, we don't know they're dead," that kept a foothold, a claim on Vietnam by an imperialist colonial power. They said, "Vietnam, you have to turn over those POWs." And Vietnam said, "We don't have any POWs. We gave you Mr. McCain back and a few other guys that we had been bombing us. I know they're American heroes, and even Bernie loves them. But those were crimes, by the way, not recognized, but those were crimes." And so they created a political movement favored by the right, saying that we had to go and rescue them. There's a movie called Rambo. There is all the Chuck Norris movies, all predicated on this idea that MIA meant living American servicemen abroad who hadn't been returned by the bad guys. That flag now adorns federal buildings. And when Joe Biden was sworn in, Old Glory, the red, white, and blue, the stars, which is supposed to fly all by itself, The pledge is, I pledge allegiance to the flag and to the republic for which it stands. It's not flags, plural. There's only one flag, American flag. But creeping up that pole is a black flag, which is a political interest group, which now is part of American life. It doesn't belong there. And I hate to tell Americans about this, but it doesn't belong there. No flag is supposed to share space with the American flag. And a particularly a partisan flag based on a lie, I forgive, say we should forgive people who are anxious about the lost loved ones. I don't know if you know this, Phil, but there are more Vietnamese MIAs than there are Americans, that they haven't been able to account for them because they were blasted to smithereens, sadly to say. But the, and it's been pointed out, there are more MIAs from World War II missing that have never been accounted for, Americans, than Vietnam. So this was a political game, and the liberals surrendered. John Kerry was one of the leading guys to surrender. After all, he was a Vietnam vet. He was one of the people who brought charges of war crimes when he was a young man. You remember, Phil?
I remember. He was very morally outraged at these war crimes. And somewhere along the line, he lost his outrage.
And he transformed himself into, yes, sir, I'm ready to serve. They let it out in his little bio that he had killed a Vietnamese, shot him with a machine gun. And suddenly he was a patriot, which meant Michael Moore thought he could be elected. But he didn't embrace that black flag as strongly as he needed to if he really wanted to play that game. And he got swift boated. You remember that? They said, well, actually,
yeah, that was the end of him. Yeah.
He was he had a, you know, influence or something. The guys who created that came from the right, and now they have adorned the flagpole of the United States, and it flew over the inauguration. That flag, take a look in the picture, you'll see it flying. And that is a symbol, apparently permanent, of America's division over their identity. That would be something else they ought to ask themselves. How did a partisan, politically partisan flag come to be associated with the one flag of all the people? So there's that. This is the Taylor Report.
Phil, sorry to break in. We've got to say a word about Henry Hank Aaron, who died this week. I'm sorry?
Did you ever see him play?
Yes, I believe I did. I think I saw him once or twice, yeah.
In the flesh?
In the flesh, yeah.
Well, I got to make, when the COVID goes away, I'm going to shake your hand. I want to shake hands with the guy who saw him play in the flesh. I'm a great believer in that.
And I was watching on TV when he hit the home run that broke Babe Ruth's record. And if we were to believe it at the time, broke the hearts of every white supremacist in America who just thought that now the world had come to an end because Babe Ruth's storied record of having hit the most home runs in history had been broken and broken by a black man.
The unbreakable. It was thought to be. And this, let us say that we've had some home run kings later, and they were large men with, you know, who swung to hit home runs. Hank Aaron was a skilled ball player who went for the doubles and the singles, and he was a high batting average, a lot of RBIs. Somebody said the only stimulus he used was he was a chain smoker.
And he lived to 86. Look at that.
Big guy. His home runs were legitimate. He was a tape measure. He was hitting home runs just because he had a good swing. And truly gifted. And, you know, when he had to have security in the ballpark when he hit the home run. You know that.
That's right. Because and two fans went on the field, and the security guy had to decide whether those fans were there to congratulate him or to harm him. Right.
That was very dangerous.
Yeah.
If you look at the footage, that was really dangerous. that they, you know, that I can picture it myself, the fellow trying to grab him. And I don't know if anybody ever identified, I love the forensics. I don't know if anybody ever interviewed the guy who did try to grab him, but this is a thing about crowds. Crowds are dangerous, they to themselves mainly. And you have to, when you have great excitement, it's, you know, it has to be some way to break it and divert them and get people to calm down. But he, like Jackie Robinson and all the major, to this day, actually, any major black athlete has to have it in his mind that he has to be careful. Not just, well, actually, it's a 24-hour-a-day problem. But it's a wonderful thing, that accomplishment of Hank Aaron, because also he was such a terrific individual. And I do think that there is a tendency to make everything into, you know, Jackie. I saw a ball game this summer, past summer, where everybody on, it was Jackie Robinson Day, and everybody wore a Jackie Robinson number, as you know, Phil, they do it every year, right?
Yeah, on, that's right. That's number 42, right.
And they wear it on, is, I don't know if it's the day that he broke into Major League Ball or it's his birthday, I don't know which. But the problem is that almost every player I was looking at is, were white. And it is a noticeable fact that Black Americans are not very well represented any longer in baseball. And there's been, and I think this should it'll be addressed as to why this is happening or has happened. And it doesn't, and it's not encouraging that that they put on that number 42. And we probably ought to be talking about all the major black ball players. There are so many who have made baseball basically what it is, all the, so many of the great ones, and also address the issue of why baseball is not attracting black athletes, and might look at the white ownership. That would be where I would start. And even football, basketball, they still have this issue of ownership, managing, and that sort of thing. Who gets to coach? This is the Taylor Report. I think we're drawing close to our exit time. I want to make sure I say Paul Rusesabagina of Rwanda is facing a terrible situation. They intend to put him in a trial sometime soon. He was illegally removed from Dubai. And that is where Canada's attention should be, and America's attention, if they believe, they like to say they believe in the rule of law and the protection of people's rights. Rusesabagina was kidnapped, and his rights have been taken away. And his right to be protected as a Belgian citizen who... Belgium is supposed to tell Rwanda that they cannot take a Belgian citizen from Dubai without due process. That's the beginning and end of that. I urge you, everybody, to go to the site of C. Kanimba to follow the day-to-day news, but people should be speaking up in Canada. Canada, by the way, cooperates very closely with Rwanda. And when you see what's going on with Rusesabagina, you see what's wrong with the policy of the Canadian government. They are not favoring democracy. So when they say they're a democratic alliance, that's a lie. This is the Taylor Report, and we thank you for listening. See you next time.